good to see you all early in the morning. Thanks for coming out. You know, I just want to share some thoughts about marijuana drug policy from the perspective of a travel writer and also from the perspective of somebody who's a businessman who has been speaking out in public on this for the last decade, because that's really what I think is the opportunity right now is to make marijuana more less scary and more accessible to the general public or just comfortable with the ideas we're trying to push. And it occurs to me we really need to be smart about understanding our opposition. You know, we're all hip to this truth of our cause and everything here, but there's a lot of scared people out there. We need to know why. I've spent a fair amount of time talking to policemen. I had a dinner with a police chief in Seattle. He was Gil Karlikowski's right-hand man in Seattle. And me and this man are pretty good friends now. I just got to, it's great to know him. And, you know, he's a good man. And he cares about drug abuse. And he sees things completely different than I do. And I care about it. He cares about it. Everybody here cares about it. And I want to talk not about how fun it is to smoke marijuana, but how tragic this law is in our society and how we can get together with people who care and make some progress on that. So I'll talk more about my conversation with him later on, but he looked at me at this one dinner, and he knows how hard I work at this, and like all of you guys working at this, and he just said, "Why are you in this fight?" He said, "You're a rich white guy in the suburbs. You can smoke for the rest of your life. You can send emails to everybody, invite them over for a party, and you're completely safe. It's just, why are you in this?" And I thought about it. I thought, that's a good question. And I said, I think it's because I really like travel. And, you know, I'm a travel writer, and for me, high is a place. I spend a third of my adult life running around the world writing guidebooks. That's what I do for a living. And it's beautiful to travel. And high, in an interesting way, is a very sweet place. It's a place where my cooking is good. My speakers are just like the best speakers anywhere. It's a place where conversations slither around like stray cats, you know? It's just sometimes I want to go there. And other people want to go there too. And there's 80,000 people in jail today because they went to that place. That's just not right. Now, there are occasions when my government can say, no, you can't go there. And that's okay. I appreciate that. But if my government says I can't go there, there better be a good reason. And as far as I can find, there's no good reason for my government to say I can't go to that place called high. And we need to communicate that. Now, I simply like to smoke pot. It makes me happy. That's all there is to it. I believe that the responsible adult use of marijuana as a recreational drug is a civil liberty. You know, that's just my theme right there. It's a civil liberty. It's illegal in this country, and as a matter of principle, I think it's good citizenship to speak up smartly and communicate why that is wrong. All right? Now, this policeman had literally stalked me. It was creepy. I've been giving talks all over the Puget Sound. He knew all my lines. This is a very smart man, making pretty decent money, spending hours and hours listening to me give my talks. And we sat down, and he said, "You're full of bull. Everything you say is just based on fictions and lies and feel-good statistics. There's only one thing in all of my presentations that he agreed with." And he said, "I can't argue with your stance that it's a civil liberty. That's our viable avenue, as far as I'm concerned. We've got to deal with the opposition. And they'll buy this civil liberty thing if we can get it across." Now, our challenge is, how do we win this civil liberty while dealing credibly with the downside of marijuana? That's our challenge. It's a drug. I'm not promoting this drug. Drugs are not in themselves good. Some people like them, others don't. It's not healthy. I would never say it's healthy. It can be abused. It can mess people up. It, for certain people, in certain ways, can be addictive. I will acknowledge that. I need to acknowledge that, or they're going to slam the door on me. I don't need you guys to believe me. I need those guys out there who think we're a bunch of freaks to believe me, okay? That's my serious work. It's not for kids. It's not for driving. If anybody is caught driving intoxicated by anything, it should be our theme that you throw the book at them. And then we undercut half of the arguments against us. Not for kids, not for driving. It's a civil liberty. Now, because I travel, I'm able to bring a European perspective to things. That's my thing. I'm an odd American who spent, you know, a third of my adult life living out of a carry-on the airplane-sized suitcase overseas, and I look at our country from a distance. And when I look at our country from a distance, I see things with a little more clarity than if I look at it from right here. It's just kind of logical. You see, there's the higher contrast problems. You see how other smart people are dealing with similar problems and so on. I look at our country from a distance, and we are just so enamored with happiness and freedom and all that kind of stuff. Yet in so many ways, we've got the most difficult time being free and having happiness in our country. We have the shortest vacations in the rich world, without any doubt. And we celebrate vacations. We're getting conned. I met a Greek a couple years ago in the Peloponnese, and he spent 20 years, most of his working life in New York, and then he goes back home, like a lot of Greeks do, to retire in the old country. And he told me, you know, when I was in America, it never occurred to me once to take a nap. It just wasn't an option. You just don't take naps. You work. Go back to Greece, now I can take a nap. And we ridicule the European work ethic, you know. What about life? I'm a tour guide. For 25 years, I was taking tours around Europe. One of my great frustrations is I would take my American tour groups to these wonderful spas, these spa towns in Germany. And my groups would stay in the bus. Americans are so uptight about nudity. They couldn't get naked with German strangers. It's bizarre. I make TV shows. For 20 years I've made TV shows. There are about traveling in Europe, celebrating Europe's culture and so on. There are still sizable cities in conservative corners of this country that have to air my show after 10 o'clock at night so kids can't see breasts painted onto canvas 500 years ago. Penises chipped out of marble 2,000 years ago because they just can't see that. I mean, we've got some interesting hang-ups in the United States. I mean, somebody can be completely railroaded out of decent life if they buy sex. And in Europe, they've got 8-story tall brothels that are text and regulated. I mean, they're just pragmatic and realistic about not legislating morality. Down the street from those 8-story tall brothels, they've got, I'm thinking about Frankfurt here, a place called Cafe Fix. And that's where needle junkies go to get counseling and deal with their addictions. It's a very loving, compassionate, smart, honest approach to life in Europe. And we can be inspired by that. I'm hanging out with friends in Barcelona. The kids paddle off to bed. A couple of joints come out. Everybody just relax and smoke some pot. It's just no big deal. When I travel, I look back at our country and I see a land of lies. I just see a land of lies. I see a land of sorry people, abused by the media, frightened into accepting lies. A dumbed-down America celebrating anti-intellectualism these days, embracing lies. And for me, the, quote, evil of marijuana is one lie too many. I believe the war our country is waging against marijuana is a wrong-minded prohibition of our generation. It's counterproductive. We're arresting 800,000 people a year on this silly war. And we can end it. That's why I speak out. That's why I'm on the normal board. And that's why all of us are here today, I think. We've got business to do. We've got business to do. I blame my marijuana activism on my work. I don't think if I had traveled, I would have really realized what's going on here. But, you know, when I teach travel, I'm all about accelerated living. To me, it's really a great thing for Americans who generally work too hard to have a real vacation, to have a real experience, to make more friends, to learn more, to carbonate their life. It makes me a little bit of a strange American living far away, talking with people who find different truths to be self-evident and God-given. I'm a very sort of self-assured person. I kind of know what I think is right and so on. Then I meet somebody else who's just as smart as me who sees it entirely differently. And it humbles me. And that kind of humbleness is a real good thing. It's the way you overcome your ethnocentricity. And I've learned that it just makes sense to get off the fundamentalism kind of I'm right and everybody else can figure it out sort of thing and give everybody a little wiggle room. It just, things go better that way. When you go to Europe, you find things really radically different. I mean, little silly things. You go to Bulgaria and nodding no means yes. And this means no. I mean, that's really confusing. I've walked into so many doors, it's amazing my nose is in one piece. In France, slow service is good service. I've had so many of my tourists just really upset about the slow service in Paris. They're respecting you. They want you to have the table all night. If you know how to speak French, you could get the bill in a second, but they are not rushing you. That's honorable service. In Spain, they are evangelical about ham. Great ham. They eat pig's ears like beer nuts. I mean, it's just incredible when you go to Spain how into ham they are. I love the way travel just makes things different. It refreshes my life. It gives me a different perspective. It's a lot like marijuana. It really is when you think about it. Now, as a travel writer, I think my calling is to kind of be a medieval jester. You know, in the Middle Ages, the king had the jester. He gave him room and board. And his job was to go out there and, you know, go to the normal convention and figure out what it's like and then come into the castle and tell the king what's going on. And the king didn't kill him. The jester was the one guy that could talk straight to the king, and the king needed to know that information. It's a beautiful concept. Well, as a travel writer, I get to go out and come back and tell the people inside the court what's going on out there. It's a very fun work, and what I like to do is be a little bit annoying by invading people's comfort zones. I get to do that with my TV work. You know, we film foie gras, the horse feeding of the geese, in the Dordogne. I mean, the British just go crazy about that. And in Chicago, for a time, it was illegal to serve it. I mean, we need to know why people love foie gras and why the geese in France are quite happy with their corn, all right? We need to also, when we travel, we learn from history. I mean, I think it's ethically wrong for me as a tour guide to take somebody to Germany without visiting a concentration camp. You know, we get people out of their comfort zones. They learn from history. A lot of Americans are scared to death about Islam. I mean, for 20 years, I've been frustrated by Americans thinking Islam's going to take us over. That's a loony concept. I mean, even 20 years ago, when my 23-year-old son was 3 years old, I remember at the dinner table when we were saying thanks to God for our meal, and his grandpa was there, I'd teach my little son to say, Allah, Allah, Allah. Just to kind of freak out my dad. There's so much fear in our society. Have you noticed that lately? Fear is being used against us. It's running rampant. And when there's fear, there's somebody pushing it behind it with an agenda. And I think we need to stand up against fear. And, you know, as a travel writer, that's one thing I like to do is tackle that fear. I'm just as afraid as anybody else about some destinations, but I find out when I go there, my fear is generally unfounded. And it encourages me to have that boldness. It's not particularly courageous. It's just a realization that fear is the enemy. I want to tackle that fear and overcome it. Fear is based on misinformation and lack of experience in so many cases. You can look at a whirling dervish, and the guy just looks like some kind of a freak. Or you can talk to the whirling dervish and find out when he whirls, he's connecting his community with God. I mean, it's such a bit, you know, those whirling dervishes that you see in cruise ship entertainment. Well, I mean, I took a tour group once to a dervish, and he's not, I mean, you can see him on a gymnasium floor in a cruise ship entertainment format, or you can see him on his rooftop as the sun's going down praying. These guys are like Franciscans of the Islamic faith. And the whirling dervish said, you can take your group to watch me pray, but I got to explain to you what we're doing first. I said, great. So I said, when we whirl, we put one foot in our community, the other foot goes around and touches all corners of God's great creation. Our hand goes up, acknowledging our Creator, and the other hand goes down like a teapot, showering the love of God onto our community and the world. And he goes around and around, and he gets into that trance, and his robe billows out, and his head tilts over, and he's thinking about the diversity on the planet and the importance of his community and his hometown and the love of God, our Creator, and so on. And he whirls, and he thinks about that. Suddenly, that dervish is not so scary. Just because you had a chance to talk to him. You had a chance to be on the rooftop with him when the sun's going down and watch him and understand his way of life. I was in Iran recently. Iran's pretty scary to a lot of Americans.
I was scared.
We almost left our big camera in Athens, taking our little sneak camera in for thinking they'd stone us if they saw an American film crew on the streets of Tehran. Got there. Thank goodness I had the nerve to bring the big camera in. I've never been so warmly and politely received in any country in the world as I was in Iran. I mean, it was amazing. We were stuck in a traffic jam one day. I mean, Tehran's a big city, 14 million people, a lot of traffic jams. Just hanging out in the traffic jam. I vividly remember the man in the next car asked my driver to roll down the window. He handed over a bouquet of flowers, and he said, "Give this to the foreigner in your back seat and apologize for our traffic." I mean, that just doesn't happen here. A lot of Americans are scared to death about Iranians. Death to America, you know. I was sitting in the car a little while later in another traffic jam. Suddenly, my driver bursts out, "Death to traffic." And I thought, what? I thought it was death to America or death to Israel. He said, "No, right now it's death to traffic." I said, "What's with that?" He said, "Well, here in Iran, whenever something's frustrating to us and out of our control, we say death to that." Wow. Had I not gone there, I wouldn't have realized that death to is sort of a literal translation of damn. Haven't you thought that sometime in your life? Damn those teenagers. You don't want them to die and burn in hell for an eternity. It's just after midnight. Turn the music down. I'm trying to sleep. Damn those teenagers. Death to teenagers. Well, to me, fear is for people who don't get out much. We get out. There's a lot of people who are against us who are going to keep us struggling here and, you know, for a long, long time, mainly because they don't get out much. Older people, they don't get out much. They don't have a DVR. If they did, they can't use it. All they know how to do is turn on the TV, and then it's stuck on 24/7 news. That shapes their reality. We've got to deal with that. I find that this is our communication challenge, to overcome the fear. Overcome the fear. And when I travel outside the United States, I realize for most people on this planet, a joint is about as exciting as a can of beer. And that's the way it should be. For 25 years as a tour guide, I've been really into sharing experiences. And I've had that sort of, I want to share what I like. I love music. Listen to this song. I love to eat this. Try that. And it's fun to have an experience you get when you're high, even if somebody's really afraid of it. As a tour guide, sort of that's the essence of good guiding, is share experiences, organize experiences. I can't get people on my tours to actually smoke. We can make it a possibility after the tour is over in Amsterdam. But I remember once I was in Morocco with a group. We were walking through a village up in the Rif Mountains, Chechouan, famous for its marijuana. And everybody was kind of wide-eyed, and there's lots of scary stuff going on for Americans and to be in Morocco. And this is just eight people. And I was walking around with them, and it was just a wonderland experience. And we're all a little bit on edge because we're adventuring. And these are older Americans. They had first time out in Islam and so on. And a man with a billowing robe steps out of the alley and he walks right up to it and he says, "Would you like to smoke marijuana?" And my whole group goes, "Ah!" And I look at him and I look at my group and I look at him and I say, "Yes." And I knew my group, it wasn't right for my group to smoke it, but I smoked it a little bit right there. And then I did the rest of the tour letting my group vicariously enjoy the experience of walking through that town, a trippy town, even if you're not high, but enjoying that town with the cobbles actually flowing by you, all right? So you can deal with people's fears, I guess, and that's a fun challenge for all of us. Now, in the whole drug policy discussion, I bring a European sort of sensitivity to it, or at least I try to. And Europe has drug abuse problems just like we do, and it's a serious issue in Europe, and they're not uniform in how they're going to deal with this. But I find we can be inspired and learn from Europe's successes and innovation, and it's the way it's dealing with this problem as we are. First of all, you can't talk about Europe in a sweeping way because every country in Europe has its own rules and regulations, and some of them are as regressive as us, and others are much more progressive. But generally in Europe, I find that they find it is a good idea to take the crime out of the equation, treat it as a health problem and an education challenge. I read on the European website that they figure for every euro they invest in education and counseling, they save 15 euros in health and police and incarceration costs. That's just a practical thing that Europe does in a very pragmatic way. Europe has learned that it is folly to try to legislate morality. It's just silly. Everybody's got morality, and you can't inflict your morality on somebody else. You may want to, but it doesn't work. I mean, you don't need to agree that everybody shouldn't have your morality. There's some people that say, my morality is right. But it's just futile to legislate and force people to see things the way you do. We have to learn to live together. Europe is good at that. They're more densely populated than us, and they've been around for a lot longer than us, and they're into that. A society has to measure its drug policies by certain standards. You can measure it by how many people do you lock up, or you can measure the effectiveness of your drug policies by a concept called harm reduction. Pragmatic harm reduction motors the most successful drug policies in Europe. I'm fascinated by how Europe deals with drug abuse in a pragmatic way. First of all, they separate hard drugs and soft drugs a little differently than we do. They put marijuana in with soft drugs. Soft drugs can be abused. Soft drugs can be a problem, but they treat them differently. Alcohol is dealt with in Europe in creative ways. Anybody who's a parent who's had a kid going to graduation has thought about, I hope they don't drink and drive and die on this party. Well, high school graduates drink and party all over the world. When I'm in Scandinavia, every May and June, I see rowdy kids drunk on the back of flatbed trucks, all decorated up, having an incredible party. And I learned, what's going on with this? I said, well, in Scandinavia, the parents host the keggers at graduation time. They hire the drivers, they hire the trucks, the kids decorate the trucks, the parents host the keggers, and the kids drive from one parent's home to the next, just getting completely blitzed. Now, in America, parents just say, don't drink. Promise me you won't drink. It'd be a pretty tough sell to get an American to pay for the keggers in order to save the kid's life. But in Europe, they decide, I'd rather not have the kids lying. They're going to drink anyways. Let's provide the drivers and the booze and oversee the party. It works great. The kids don't lie. They have a party and nobody dies. That's pragmatic harm reduction on an alcohol problem that the Europeans do differently than us. When it comes to hard drugs, I'm just fascinated by Europe's approach to hard drugs. And my thing is marijuana, but drug abuse in general is we can learn from. And when you go to Europe and you go into the basement of a Starbucks, a lot of times you go into the bathroom and you find blue lights. Have you ever seen blue lights in your travels? You step into a bathroom, blue lights. What's the deal? You can't see your veins. Couldn't shoot up if you wanted to. Now, there's a lot of junkies running around in Europe because there's a lot of needle addicts, and they got hard drug addicts just like we do. The difference is, in America, ours are in prison or dead, and theirs are out on the streets dealing with their problem with help from the society. And people who have a cafe don't want the junkies shooting up in their restroom, so they put the blue lights in there. Across the street, I'm thinking of Zurich. I was just in Zurich. Across the street is a machine bolted to a railing over the bridge. They used to sell tobacco, used to sell cigarettes. Now it's been retooled and it sells government-subsidized syringes. 1 franc for 2 syringes. Just generic syringes. Nobody shares needles in Switzerland. It's just ridiculous. You wouldn't share needles. They're virtually free and they're everywhere. That's a pragmatic solution. All right. And then you got down the street another one of those cafe fixes, a heroin maintenance clinic where junkies have counselors and they can get themselves back on track. They consume less of their heroin because they don't nervously need to figure out how to get it topped up. It's reliably safe and they get themselves back on track. This is a creative, innovative approach to a persistent problem that we can learn from. In the United States, we lose 18,000 people a year to heroin overdoses, and in Europe they lose 8,000 people a year, and they don't have it a criminal issue. So, you know, we can learn from that, I would think. Of course, when it comes to marijuana, Europe is famously progressive. As I mentioned, you can't really make sweeping statements because some countries are harder on pot than we are, but generally I think Europe is more progressive and smart on this issue. If you go to the European website, and you search for cannabis, the only discussion of cannabis in their drug pages on their website in the EU is in the sense of, quote, problem cannabis use, okay? I mean, it can be abused just like alcohol. when I'm traveling, it's fun to bump into different countries and see how they deal with it. I was just in Portugal, and in Portugal, for 10 years now, they have decriminalized the consumption of all drugs. And they've got a track record now, and I just talked to the man who wrote this law and put it into action. I interviewed him on my radio show, and they're satisfied that there's been no substantial or measurable increase in drug consumption since they have decriminalized its consumption. They've had no drug tourism problem, which is a fear of anybody who's got borders. Oh, it's easy over there. All the kids will cross the border and get high. And what's really interesting for me that we can learn from is that there is not a reservoir of people that have jumped into drug abuse because it's legal. I think a driving problem that we've got here in the United States is most people who are against decriminalization of marijuana think there's a whole reservoir of good people who would ruin their lives if only it was legal. This is an amazing concept, but that's the standard outlook of most Americans. We've got to deal with that. It's not the truth. Marijuana could be legal tomorrow, and it wouldn't have a measurable effect on the consumption of the stuff. It would just take the crime and the violence and the money out of it. In Spain, I was just in Spain, and we filmed this. When I do my TV show, it's really fun to incorporate this into our script without getting too annoying. And in Spain, now, you can't sell marijuana, but anybody can grow their own marijuana for their own consumption. And you've got shops that hang out a shingle, and it's just a marijuana leaf. And you go in there, and you got all the seeds, you got fancy catalogs, you got all the gear and all the fertilizer. And it's just quite a sophisticated industry they've got going. And it's not a big deal. That's the interesting thing. Most Dutch people have never smelled marijuana. Most Dutch people have never been into a coffee shop. It's just a big deal for people like us who can do hard time for it. It's just not a big deal. In the Netherlands, they haven't arrested a pot smoker since 1976. And they like it. The law enforcement anti-drug people like their system. My friends in the Netherlands remind me all the time, a society has to make a choice. You can tolerate alternative lifestyles or you can build more prisons. And then they always hit me with that notion that the United States incarcerates more people than anybody else in the world. And it's true, and it's pretty pathetic. Now, I go to a lot of coffee shops in Amsterdam. It's part of my guidebook research chores. Okay. And I sit and I observe, and it's a fascinating dynamic. There's sort of a metabolism here of this little industry and solving this need in the society. You know, there's loner bongs, there's people kept checking their email. No minors, the older people don't like the edgy vibe, so they park their bike and get a little bit to go. There's strictly no hard drugs. Everywhere in Europe, when you go to Christiania in Copenhagen or anywhere in the Netherlands, pot's fine, no hard drugs, you see. They make that delineation really beautifully. The police like it. The police in the Netherlands see the coffee shops as a firewall between experimentation with a soft drug and education about dangerous hard drugs, you see. And the police like it because they know where the experimenting population goes, and they got a bulletin board there, and they can put up notices about what's dangerous on the streets in the way of hard drugs. And it's an effective way to communicate with people at risk that way. They're still struggling with finding a way to legalize the wholesale business of marijuana. And the Netherlands, even though they've been at it for 25 years now, they still haven't figured that out. So they have what's called the gray area, you know. The gray area. Just wink, wink. What they don't want is big industries. When you think about Cannabis Cup and so on, it's little boutique growers. Little boutique growers. It's not, you know, you don't have Starbucks for marijuana. You got little microbrews. And they've been able to get fancy enough on that in their technology. They told me, my friend who runs a coffee shop in the Netherlands told me, they don't import much. Most of it's locally grown, and it's got all the characteristics of stuff that used to be imported. Now, the cool thing when you look at the Netherlands and how they've dealt with this is that they have made the consumption, the public consumption and sale of marijuana and so on, not scary to people in our society who would really be scared about this. And this is an issue that's challenging our movement and our work right here within our own community. We got all this little squabbling within our ranks based on tactics, you see. And some people want to be idealistic and say it's got to be free, freedom, 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 and no regulation. Other people say, let's be realistic, that'll never sell. It's got to be viable politically, given the fact that 80% of the people out there who vote are afraid about their kids, you see. If slackers and heads voted, it'd be, I mean, Jerry Garcia would be president, you know. But that's just not going to happen. So we got to deal with that political reality. We don't vote. Our people don't vote. Our enemy votes. We've got to play on their terms. The Dutch have. It's clear. In the Dutch system, there's strict age limits. You don't sell it to minors. There's strict quantity limits. There's no aggressive advertising. You don't see billboards or ads for marijuana anywhere in Europe. You go, as a travel writer, I have to help my people function. Wherever I go, I say, you go into this bar, you don't speak the language, how are you going to order a drink? I need to explain that. You go into a coffee shop, what's for sale? You can't tell. If you're just a tourist stumbles into a coffee shop in the Netherlands, you don't know what to buy. I ask the guy, well, come on, where's the menu? Well, you have to push the button to light the panel to reveal the menu. I have to take the initiative physically to get the information. Legally, it can't come to me. Do you see? Now, that seems kind of silly, but they have overcome the public concern that it would be advertised. And when I push that button and read the menu, I'm thankful that they're pragmatic and viable with a scared, frightened public that would just as soon the whole issue go away. You see, they've been assured it's not for kids. There won't be coffee shops near schools. All of these little headaches that you got to deal with to be viable with a frightened public. It's fun just to track it as a business. I mean, the odd thing right now in Europe is, of course, they're going smoke-free. There's no tobacco in any places in Europe. Smoky pubs are smoke-free pubs now, or they're out of business. The challenge for coffee shops in the Netherlands is Europeans like to roll their marijuana with tobacco. And if you don't have an outdoor place to smoke it, you don't have anybody smoking tobacco in your facility anymore. And that's a challenge for them. I know the big threat for coffee shops, ironically, in the Netherlands is they can get shut down by allowing the consumption of tobacco on their premises, which is kind of odd. The mayor right now in the Netherlands, or in Amsterdam, is pushing an initiative to lighten up on the inventory list. The law is they can keep one half a kilo, that's 1 pound, on the premises. That's the maximum inventory they can have. You can sell a ton of pot legally, but you can never have more than 500 grams in your shop. Now, the consequence is you've got all these petty deliveries going on all the time. It's causing traffic congestion in the city. So the mayor of Amsterdam wants to double the allotable inventory to 1 kilo, which I think is that's way beyond what we're talking about. They're talking about traffic congestion because it's legal rather than is it legal. All over the world, you find that they've decriminalized marijuana rather than legalized it, and you wonder what's going on here. In my experience, it's just because they don't want to have a trade war with the United States. If anybody legalizes it, they're in a real tough struggle with the United States. My friends in Denmark, at Christiania, say, be a little careful. Every year we got to arrest a couple pot smokers or we will lose our favored trade status with the United States of America. Now, a big concern for people that oppose us is this whole notion of a gateway drug. Dutch people are just as concerned about gateway drug as we are. They've had a 25-year track record, and they find the only thing gateway about marijuana is if it is illegal. It's sold by people on the streets, criminals on the streets, who have a vested interest in getting you into more expensive, more addictive, and more profitable drugs. If you care about marijuana not being a gateway drug, you want it regulated and legal. And that's the experience in Europe. The Netherlands has been decriminalizing marijuana for 25 years. They smoke per capita half what we do here in the United States by every measure, by their measure, by our measure, by the government's measure, by pro and con parties in this discussion. There's no question we smoke double what they smoke per capita. There's no rational conclusion that when it's legal, consumption skyrockets. When you think about the whole gateway aspect of it, when you look at the Netherlands' experience over 25 years, their hard drug-taking population has not grown, and it has aged. They find that marijuana, experimenting with drugs, is a stage in your life. You can't stop people from experimenting with drugs. And if you can do it in a controlled way with the soft drugs, that helps people get through that. And some people, it's going to be their lifestyle for the rest of their life. That's cool. Most people just try it. It's fun. A few years later, they're onto other stuff. It's no big deal. At least that's the Dutch experience. Now, politicians, teachers, parents, police. These are the forces in our society that stand in our way. And this is a very mighty force. Politicians, parents, teachers, and police. We need to respect them. We need to understand them. We need to assume they care just like we do. They're motivated by love and fear. And we need to enlighten them. The truth is on our side. The challenge is for us to communicate. I don't think we've done a very good job of communicating that to caring people who, if they were enlightened, would realize it's just as scary as a can of beer. The parents and the cops, from my experience, their driving mission is to protect kids and stop violence. The cops I've talked to, they don't want to evaluate laws. They're hired to enforce laws. As far as they're concerned, any troublemaker out there is either drunk or stoned on something. It's just drugs, and they don't differentiate. It's just drugs. Marijuana, whatever, it's drugs, drug problems. For them, the whole marijuana thing is a smokescreen. They think it's a Trojan horse for legalization. It sort of insults them. The concept harm reduction to them is a catchphrase that is just obviously trying to legalize it. So we've got to understand where they're at from their perspective. I want to be credible when I talk to people because I'm talking as much as I can to conservative groups. And the police have told me that from a law enforcement point of view, they believe the current laws are effective in having every year less and less young people smoking pot. I don't know if that's right or not, but that's what they believe. They believe that children need to be protected. They believe it's not healthy. It's addictive. They're worried about driving. They don't believe our numbers. And, as I said, they believe the civil liberty thing. They just are worried about violence and children. My experience peeking out is that, God, there's a lot of people that agree with us, but people are afraid to say so. I mean, look at me. I'm the best celebrity you can come up with.
I mean, it's just frustrating. I mean, you know who agrees with us, and you know how afraid they are.
You know, they're afraid because they were worried about their pocketbook, I think. What about my endorsements? I got endorsement concerns, just like Michael Phelps. My TV show is underwritten. You know, all the radio stations, 150 radio stations carry my show. I got to be careful about this. I've got to be good. I've got to be careful. I've got to be in their financial interest. It's an edgy thing. I just did a full issue of Smithsonian Magazine with my name on it. That's scary for them to have a marijuana advocate on a government-funded publication. The whole issue almost was squashed, and I had to call them up and give them a little lecture about civics and democracy and freedom. You know? But I have a responsibility. I'm not pro-drugs. I'm pro-civil liberties. You know, I'm pro-harm reduction. I'm pro-pragmatic. How can we help our kids deal with these challenges? I find when I'm on the news, and, you know, you get onto hemp radio, and it's really no problem, but when you're on some mainstream news that has advertisers, there's nervousness. And these guys are asking all the straight questions, and they're scared to even talk about this. And as soon as the mic's off, they say, thank you for speaking out. Every time the mic's off, thank you for speaking out. God bless you for talking some common sense. We need to explain this in a larger than a bumper sticker way. Because if it's just a bumper sticker, we can be swift-boated. There's a lot of logic to our fight. But we need a little more of attention span. I've seen great progress in the last decade. I talk about marijuana every chance I get in polite company. Everybody knows I'm a board member of Normal. When ACLU asked me to make this half-hour documentary, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but check it out. I think they did a great job on that. Just Google ACLU and Rick Steves. I'm so proud of it to share that with caring, frightened neighbors. I've shared this with community leaders. I'm from Seattle. My mayor, my governor, both my senators, my congressmen know exactly how I feel on this. They don't need to agree with me, but they respect me. I took my pastor for a walk. He knows I see no contradiction in this civil liberty, in this recreation, in this form of relaxation, and my faith. There's no logical reason to apologize for it. People know where I stand, I'm proud of it, and I'm pretty hard to put down as a productive citizen. You see, I mean, that's my challenge. I have to be careful. It's not as fun as it might be, but this is my lot in life. A lot of people say, what about your business, you know? Doesn't this hurt your business? I employ 80 people. They're worried about their employment. There's a lot of people who wanted to come here today but couldn't because they're worried about their employment. I get people writing me letters saying, I just heard what you said on Normal thing there, and we're never going to take your tours again. And all I can think is Europe will be more fun without you. So, I'll tell you, corporations are nervous, and I'll tell you, corporations' morality is all based on their bottom line. I think the public is way ahead of the politicians, and I think the politicians are way ahead of the corporations on this. It's a movement forward. But I find this corporate problem is really powerful because they're the people who make media possible. They're the people that shape public opinion. Think about the whole Michael Phelps thing, you know. As soon as he smokes pot, Kellogg's going to drop him, right? The way I understand it, Kellogg's stock just plummeted, and then Subway was going to drop Michael Phelps also. They saw what happened to Subway, Kellogg's stock. All of a sudden, Subway has a little meeting and said, you know, let's keep him. And in fact, they then had a campaign called Have a Subway Sandwich, Feel the Buzz. Google that. If you think there's any morality in the corporate outcry against drugs, Google that and think about it. All they care about is the bottom line. And so we got to understand that fear on their part. Well, speaking out of marijuana has been a plus for my persona publicly. I'll tell you that. And I want you to know that if you are a good citizen and you support changing of a law, you're not promoting drug use. Okay? And I don't know if you think that's wimping out or anything, but I believe that's what's viable. I just got the Lutheran of the Year Award, and I was introduced as a board member of Normal. All right? The State Department gave me the Citizen Diplomat of the Year Award. They flew me all the way to Washington, D.C. for this, and I was introduced as a board member of Normal. I get the Seattle Philanthropic Small Business Award. I get the Seattle Entrepreneurial Award or whatever. I am proudly a board member of Normal because we are waging a campaign designed to reduce harm in our society and promote an important civil liberty. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. We need to preempt the attacks on our character. I want to hit that again and again. It's not for kids. You can abuse it, so be careful and have, you know, education about that. There's no smoking and driving. It's not pro-hard drugs. We need to be straight and honest about this civil liberty bit. I am a hardworking, church-going, kid-raising, tax-paying citizen. And if I go home after a long day of work and want to smoke a joint to relax, that's my right. Again, it is responsible citizenship to change a bad law. Our Washington State prosecuting attorney, Mike McKay, I sat on a panel with him a couple months ago, and he said it's flat-out bad law. He doesn't agree with marijuana and stuff, but it's stupid law, he says, you know. This is very good citizenship to advocate for the changing of a bad law. Back in the 1930s, Mayor LaGuardia in New York said, hey, if a society has a law in the books that it does not intend to enforce consistently and across the board, the very existence of that law erodes respect for law enforcement in general. Get rid of the law. That's what we're doing. This is an evolutionary thing. This is an awareness-raising thing. This is a good struggle. I am so proud to support Normal and to be on board with all of you. I want to challenge all of us to recognize that this is not a charity, this is a service. We need to remind our friends who aren't here that if you're not making advocacy strong, we're not going to see change. We've got to support groups like Normal, and we've got to give America a third choice. I mean, right now the choice is can you be hard on drugs or soft on drugs? And I think together we can give our society a chance to be smart on drugs, all right? So thank you all for being here. It's an inspiration for me to hang out here and meet you and see what's going on. I'm just really inspired by that, and I want to wish you well and also wish you happy travels, even if you're just staying home, okay? Thanks.